Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Welcome to Democratic Perspective, folks. This is Steve Williamson.
And this is Mike Cosentino, the beloved co-host.
Beloved co-host of Democratic Perspective. We have with us today a member of the editorial board of Democratic Perspective. He's the author of the Tea Publican Book of Lies. I think he doesn't think they're telling the truth. Gary?
Yeah, it's I have a book with debunking 50 common Republican lies, and I'm working on a second book that has I already have more than 100 for that book, and they're coming faster and faster because it's a political year.
Yeah, you're trying to say that it's a campaign season, so the lies are coming almost faster than you can compile them.
Well, they claim they're the truth. But
and the book only costs $11-$12, and it's available on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and here in the Sedona area, it's going into the local bookstores soon.
And here on Democratic Perspectives, we do try to
push books by.
Well, no, we try to do that too, but we also try to point out when a perspective is a perspective, and that there are different ways of looking at things. But
yeah, I think that's what we want to make clear. This is a program with a perspective that's looking at political bit from an angle. We want it to be fact-based. We want it to be truthful. But if it's a matter of values, you know, for us, the economic values are to preserve the economic security and opportunity for American people. That's kind of the bottom line.
Yeah, we come down on the side of the middle class. We come down on the job side. We will often come down on the environment side. We'll come down on school side. We'll come down on labor side if there's going to be a perspective. But what I'm trying to get at is that Gary's book, there is no – the lies are not perspective. They are just – lies.
Yeah, I mean, there is a truth.
A lie is not a perspective.
Yeah, there is basing your attitudes and your arguments on fact. Last week when I was working on my car garage and my carport, Mike and Gary were on the show. I'm wondering whether Romney installed
your
his
car
own
elevator.
Car elevator.
That's
yeah,
right. That's right.
I'm wondering
like
if
Romney
he installed his own one. Yeah, you know.
Yes.
I'm thinking of buying some used Cadillacs. You know, kind of fill up my number of cars I own.
Yeah, you might be able to buy some used three wheelers, four wheels. You can't even afford four wheels.
So last week, and I listened to the podcast, folks, and I recommend you listen to the podcast because you know, we go through a lot of facts. There are lots of figures, and I think we'll be doing that today. But if you listen to podcasts, you really find out what's going on. And last week, you guys talked about Romney's money, right?
Right.
What's happened since then? I know that Romney has doubled down on not releasing his tax returns.
Correct.
We summarized, and Gary's going to help me do this real quick. We summarized real quickly. Romney made $45 million on the tax return they released. The Obamas made $700,000. Romney paid 14% on the year that we know of. The Obamas paid something like 30%. It's that simple. Romney's father released 12 years of his tax returns because he said releasing one when he was running for office. George Romney, when he was running, released 12 years of tax returns because he said you can hide stuff releasing only one. And that's and now Republicans, Democrats, economists, everybody's calling for Romney to release some more tax returns.
Speaking of hiding things. I think the most disturbing thing about Romney's income, you know, he's a millionaire. Good for him. That's great. You know, that's what this country is about. The what it's not about, in my view, is taking your proceeds and shipping them offshore to offshore bank accounts in the Caymans and Bermuda and Switzerland and Luxembourg, and shifting it around and using every trick in the book to avoid paying taxes. I mean, that's not American.
See, the thing, folks, is Romney's known he's going to run for office. He went to take over the Olympics in order to build up his political cred so he could run for office. So he's known that. that since 1999, and he's had all that time to clean up his tax reports. Now, the thing is, if they look this bad in 2010, what do they look like back then? What's he hiding? Well, there's a lot of speculation. People think that perhaps he paid almost no taxes whatsoever some years.
Right.
What else? There's a bunch of issues about when he took tax breaks and stuff that could be pretty devastating. We won't go into the details, but we have a man who's running for president of the United States who has extensive...
Well, and the lies about Bain Capital, and that's the other thing, that he wasn't CEO, was CEO, I did get a comment from a listener last week that she appreciated the number of times that we said there's nothing wrong with being rich. We're not, you know, after some great redistribution of wealth, some leftist movement here. At least on the radio, we might be.
I still strive to be rich.
Yeah. Well, we won't reveal that today. But the idea is, there's nothing wrong with Romney being rich in this particular case. Nothing wrong with Romney being rich. It's what he does with it, how he hides it, and that the president should be way more forthcoming with what his finances are, and to make false claims about being and the CEO of a company whose job it was to take over other companies and eliminate jobs, make it profitable for the 400 people who worked for Bain Capital. Bain Capital wasn't a 10, 20,000, 50,000 employee place. There was a few hundred people that were making a lot of profit by doing...
That's the recent figure from 2012, 400 people. I mean, that's why you never hear an argument that, you know, that Romney's created a lot of jobs at Bain, because he hasn't, and there's just no basis to even argue that.
What do you think would happen and what the right would be doing if it was found that President Obama had long had offshore accounts in Switzerland and the Caymans and so on? What do you think, and honestly, what do you think would have happened?
I like pitchforks, and they'd be surrounding the Capitol with pitchforks and screaming, and they'd be marching on the Secret Service. They wouldn't be able to hold them back.
I'm astonished at what Romney's done, and I think, you know, frankly, you know, you can hold two propositions at the same time. And if I was Romney, we're guessing, and there's a bunch of different analysis about what he's trying to hide. I wouldn't release my tax returns. I think as a tactical move, his doubling down and not releasing them is probably smart, because once we start looking at those tax returns, it's not going to look good for him. It's just going to look worse and worse.
It's like the criminal going on the stand. You know, I mean,
don't testify.
Testify? That's right.
Even the Republican, you know, conservatives are telling, you know, they're asking for him to release him, but now a lot of them are turning and saying, well, since he hasn't released him, there has to be some really bad things in the previous years, and so now they're kind of backing off of that.
And so, the argument for that is just really that that he's paying a political price for not releasing his returns. It's a high political price. If there wasn't more of a problem with releasing them, he'd release them.
By not releasing them, he's making hundreds of millions of dollars. In other words, as long as he keeps the doubt out there, then the money's pouring in. And this is strategy on top of strategy. As long as the rich believe there is some chance of him making it, and for some reason or another, he's still up in some polls, it's amazing why a guy who has offshore accounts, a guy who hides his money, a guy who doesn't pay taxes, is still up in the polls. The money's pouring in. Once he releases those tax returns, then there's going to be a popularity drive. I'm assuming, maybe not. Maybe the middle class is completely asleep.
They're deeply compassionate and generous, wealthy people in the United States who helped, you know, like Carnegie, who was a ruthless businessman, but he created the public library system over much of the U.S. There's these very generous, Bill Gates is doing a lot of stuff. Romney's charities are probably focused on his church. And so there are different kinds of charity. There's a charity helping, you know, poor kids somewhere. There's a charity helping your religion expand itself because you believe your religion is the only true religion, right? That's logical.
They are focused on his church. There was a recent article that he had, for 1 year, had put $10 million into a foundation account that has a director, but yet the contributor can control the foundation.
It does get worse. I mean, people create these charitable things that are really them and their family, and they have control over it, and they hire their brother-in-law to manage it for a fee. You have the worst case is Gingrich, right? Mm-hmm. He has a charity that dispenses no money except to publicize his books.
But Romney has...
I would point out that what Romney has done, with the possible exception of lying on SEC disclosure forms and FEC disclosure forms, which if he did, and it's likely that he did, would be felonies. But all of his tax dodges are legal.
The
thing is that they're not ethical.
Yeah, I suspect that he's given his accountants the rule: don't do anything that's illegal, but push the boundaries. And when I started a business, and one of my clients said I was looking for an accountant for it, and she said, "Well, you know, my accountant is great, but he's very aggressive. Be sure you want an aggressive accountant." And I said, no, I don't think I want an aggressive accountant, because that's how you get in trouble. And there are people going to push the edges of what could be claimed. And once he releases his tax returns, that's going to be visible. The other thing is that to change the subject a little bit from Romney personally to the Ryan plan.
And we're calling it the Romney-Ryan plan.
Romney-Ryan
plan.
Because
Romney says, get it straight here, Romney says he's going to adopt this in the first 100 days.
He told the Weekly Standard, Right Wing Magazine, I'm going to enact this plan in the first 100 days. Well, what's the Ryan Romney plan?
Well, we're going to start by saying it's insane. It really is. It's just as insane as Paul Ryan. We want to give Paul Ryan's background. This is a guy that's writing a budget for the entire nation, right? 350. He's a personal trainer, right? I heard a comment the other day. He can count reps, but he can't count money.
And they've called his budget a fraud, folks. And the reason, and we'll talk about why, and I think that's important to get to. But it's a budget that will increase the wealth of the wealthy at the price of the
poor and the middle class. The poor and the middle class. That's why it's insane. It'll increase unemployment by millions.
I read something that the Walmart heirs, I think there's just like six of them. This is the top group of heirs, not their children, own the same amount of wealth in the United States as the bottom 30% of the population. And what the Ryan Romney budget would do is to increase the wealth of the 1% and the 1% of the 1%.
Let's talk about where the cuts come from. You know, the whole point of the Ryan budget plan is to cut spending, cut the deficit, cut the national debt. All of that is good. It all depends on how you do it and when you do it. But if you look at the Ryan budget plan, what it would result in is a huge transfer, a greater transfer of wealth, probably the greatest ever in the United States, from the poor to the wealthy. The plan would increase taxes on wage earners who make between $50,000 and $100,000 by $1,300 a year. It would increase taxes on those who make between $100,000 to $200,000 by $2,600 a year. If you make between $500,000 and $1 million each year, you get a check for $35,000 back. If you happen to make over $1 million a year, the average redistribution of wealth comes to $285,000
in a refund,
and we've seen numbers as high as $300,000.
Now the problem is, since the late 1970s or early 1980s, the prosperity of the country's been going up. The amount of money, the amount of goods and services has been going up and up. The amount of money that people below the 1% make has been flat. In other words, the efficiency of our businesses, everything has gone up, and yet starting in the 1970s, everything has been flat. And this budget would make it worse, right, guys?
Right.
Yeah, one of the things that I think we should make clear is that there are parts of the budget that actually increase spending. It dramatically increases defense spending, or at least keeps it at a very high level of our GDP. It would be at the level of GDP that we had during the Cold War, which was at an all-time high. Does that. It gives that money to the defense at the expense of the poor. It takes money from Medicaid, food stamps, Pell Grants, and other programs from the poor.
Everything that, we talk about economic security, it reduces the economic security of most American people. This is what the Romney-Ryan budget does. And it reduces opportunity, because if you don't have support of Pell Grants, many of your kids are not going to be able to afford to go to college. Pell Grants, for folks who don't know it, they subsidize or help people get inexpensive loans to go to school. That's what they do.
And on the defense spending, I should point out that defense spending has risen by more than 100% since 2001. So we're at a very high level, and this would increase it, even though we don't have any real large enemies like the Soviet Union.
That's true. And to give President Obama credit, he said he would end the war in Iraq, and he's ended the war in Iraq. We're really not substantially in Iraq anymore. He said he will end the war in Afghanistan in 2014. There's no reason to believe he won't do it. I mean, he's kept his promise. He said he was going to escalate the war in Afghanistan. He was going to try to win there. He did that. Now he says it's time to leave in 2014. So our wars are going down, but Ryan wants to increase the defense budget. What are they going to do with it? I mean, the average fighter, the new fighter jets are $194 million a piece.
He's making sure there will be no peace dividend. I want to make sure we mention the progressive budget. We want to do this comparison. We got a nice comparison between the House, the Congressional Progressive Caucus submitted a thing called Budget for All. And we're going to do a little comparison between the Congressional Progressive Caucus and their Budget for All, which was talked about a lot a while back and now is back in May, has disappeared from the talk shows.
And it never really got the play. People are not even told there's an alternative. It's like the stimulus. Everyone says, the stimulus didn't work. And economists say, it created 2 or 3 million jobs. And everybody says, it didn't really just jack us out of that recession. But nobody ever heard the point of view of those of us who thought the stimulus wasn't big enough. And that was based really on economic analysis of the depth of the hole we were in economically.
Well, if there are any economists out there, supply side versus Keynesian, I mean, supply side economics never, ever, ever, ever work. We're going to have an accountant on here, and he's going to talk about how it never worked. Keynesian economics says you increase government spending during the down cycles and you back it off when things are prosperous. It's really that simple, and that way you have this, and it's been working just fine, thank you, for since 1893. I mean, we found a way to smooth out. That's what one of the huge functions of government.
To reinforce your point, Mike, is everyone thinks we need to reduce the deficit long term. There's a difference between Ryan and the progressive budget, which you probably have never even heard of, despite all the discussion among the politically active. So, Mike, tell us more about it.
Yeah, the Budget for All would increase employment by 2.1 million jobs in fiscal 2013 and 1.2 million in fiscal 2014.
So remember, folks, that when you have an increase in employment, you have an increase in the tax base because people are making money and they pay taxes.
It would do it by financing $786 billion worth of investment and job creation measures over the next 2.5 years, while also sustaining increased public investment over the next decade. The Budget for All proposes financing the Congressional Progressive Caucus's priorities by gradually rolling back the Bush-era tax cuts, adding higher tax rates for millionaires and billionaires, and fairly taxing capital gains, all of which would push back against a growing economic inequality, by the way, which some people think is the biggest problem. The Ryan budget, on the other hand, would reduce employment by 1.3 million jobs.
Right. Reduce government spending, you're going to reduce employment directly and indirectly.
In 2013, and 2.8 million jobs in fiscal 2014. The Ryan budget would also cut Medicaid and other health programs by $2.4 trillion over a decade. We've reduced Medicaid and other health programs by $2.4 trillion over a decade, shifting costs to households while exacerbating overall expenditure. Actually, Ryan budget plan, they just want you to hurry and die. Sooner you die, then the sooner we can...
Well, what it's going to do, and we talked about this on some of the first shows we had on Democratic Perspective, is it going to reduce Medicare, and it's going to do it by turning Medicare into a voucher system. And you'll get a certain amount of money a year, and as if medical expenses go up and the amount of money you go up, it gets 0.5% or 1%. I'd have to double check that, folks. The gap between the amount of money that you'll get for your medical care in your old age is going to be greater and greater. You're going to have to pay more and more, a larger percentage of your income. And when we went over the statistics of last year, it's a fairly astonishing amount of money that you're going to end up paying within a few years. Part of the Ryan plan will up the age of Medicare to 67 years old from 65. I know people I work with who wait to get on Medicare because they have no medical insurance. They cannot pay their doctor bills. I know of a fellow who went in, tried to check himself into the hospital, and they say, well, you owe us $58,000. We don't care how sick you are. You're not coming in here.
If I could jump in, back to the Keynesian supply side is basically what's known as trickle-down economics. And as Mike said, it's never been proven to work. It's been tried over and over and over again.
More than that, it's been proven not to work. It just doesn't seem to matter to the supply side.
An example of that is FDR following the Depression. FDR embraced Keynesian economics and started taking the unemployment rate from near 25% and had gotten it down in a few years to 14%. The Congress and the supply-siders argued that we had to drastically cut the deficit and cut the spending, and within a year, the unemployment went back up to 18%. Now, when you look at the Ryan-Romney plan, Economic Policy Institute predicts that if it goes into effect, that unemployment will be around 11.6% by 2014. That's just in a couple of years.
In Arizona right now, it's 8.2%, according to the Republic this morning.
So it would increase unemployment by more than 3% in just 2 years.
Right. It'll create a... Ryan had and Romney always argue that they're really fighting against the deficit. But what this really is an opportunity for them to cut the help to the poor and the less fortunate, the elderly. It'll create a really bad society. It's unethical. We have the nuns on a bus are going around and Ryan is a Catholic. Mike and I were raised as Catholic, and he's using Catholic theology to justify this, and the nuns are not happy about it.
How can you not sympathize with a bus full of nuns?
Yeah. It's hard not to.
No matter how many times
they whack this around, we still love
My knuckles have still recovered.
We have a quote from Sister Simone Campbell of that group of nuns, saying, faced with long-term debt problems, they say we must immediately slash protections for the poor, even as they fight tooth and nail for trillions of dollars in tax cuts for the wealthy and explode the debt at the same time. And then they line the pockets of the wealthiest 1% in our nation. This is wrong, and they're doing it under the guise of fiscal austerity.
That really underlines it, folks. That's exactly what it is.
This woman has a handle on this. She has an economic degree from MIT, even though all she's doing is explaining the reality of what it is. And I just want to step back for a second. There's something here about giving more money to the rich that middle class people seem to buy. We think, oh yeah, well that makes sense
because they want to be rich.
People are frightened too. The whole loss of manufacturing jobs has traumatized most working folks.
Yeah.
The ability of them to transfer jobs to China and Vietnam or wherever they're doing it has really hurt people's confidence. And it's sort of like the Middle Ages. And I've used this analogy before. The kings and the princes tell you that they have to be kings and princes. They have to be rich and you have to be poor or you'll starve. You'll be invaded by the kings and the princes who are next door. And you'll constantly hear anytime there's a call for reform, we're really talking about rebalancing the American economy so everybody prospers. This happened pretty well after World War II. All this massive war spending didn't send huge inflation in. Now, they did have some anti-inflationary measures. But that's the sort of key to this.
The Romney PACs, the other thing I'm finding interesting, the Romney PACs are switching. And I couldn't believe it. They were attacking Obama, of course, for even questioning his Bain Capital business days. You know, he was saying he shouldn't even be looking there. I have no idea why they thought that was a good, but they spent millions doing that. And they said, well, you know what? We're not going to spend millions just attacking the fact that he's looking at his bank. We're going to defend what he did at Bain Cap. They're going to spend tens of millions of dollars from here on out.
This is very frightening to the top 1% and 1% of the population. The problem is there's nothing really wrong with Bain at one level. There's nothing wrong with the venture capital
stuff
that they're doing.
Nothing wrong with making money. I've said it 10 times last show. We'll say it again here.
So the problem is people are not seeing – they're getting a public relation versions of how people get rich, of what something like Bain does. And Romney started out, we created 10,000 jobs, and people said, well, how do you show that? And they just made the figure up. Literally just made it up. Bain hasn't created any jobs for people in Bain, right? I mean, it's a tiny, tiny percentage.
We do want to take we haven't done this before in the year or so we've been doing this. We want to take a moment in the middle of this. We're doing, we haven't had talked this over with Tom, but we are going to, do a commercial here. We're going to ask for.
Go ahead.
Democratic perspective.
Go for it, Michael.
Democratic perspectives. We're doing a house ad here, Tom. Relax. This is Democratic perspectives doesn't come free. We've had a good time with it over the year. I hope you go to vvid.org and listen to some of our old podcasts. You're welcome to respond. You can respond right on the website. You can, there's lots of ways of responding. You can, we're not doing a call-in show yet, but that may happen in the future. But yeah, we do have a democratic perspective. We like to think it's just reasonable and true. But that's where we are. So we are looking for help. The way you can do it is through the website. The best way to do it is through the website. We believe we have a body of work that is a progressive talk radio, such as it is. We haven't been as shrill as these guys hold me back, quite frankly.
He's actually tied to the chair. Folks.
I thought you were holding
me
back.
We've got this button we press that when he gets too radical on us,
like all things, the truth is, Gary is the true radical.
Gary's out there. Yeah,
I'm just a loudmouth.
In my defense, I am a fiscal conservative and a social liberal. That is not radical. But I want to say that this is an ideological battle. This Ryan budget plan is really an ideological battle that they're trying to take away things that they just philosophically don't agree with. It's an opportunist sort of budget plan to get rid of programs for the poor.
I've got to go back to work on my car elevator. I don't think Romney installed his own. Okay, what are you guys going to talk about next week? I won't be here. I'll be working on that car elevator.
Well, we want to talk about politics. We want to talk about candidates. We have some great candidates throughout the state, and we have some. And we're going to talk about the kooks. We're going to talk about de-kooking the Capitol. We're following Lori Roberts' campaign in the Arizona Republic. You can look it up online. De-kook the Capitol. You can even get a button. You can even wear a button. And we'll talk about it. We'll talk about the Republicans that walked into our office and want us to de-kook everything. Thank you.
De-kook. You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.